Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome, you guys. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I'm Laura.
And I'm Marty.
And we are super excited for you guys to be joining us today. We are continuing our conversation about eyeballs in our dogs. Yes. I can see clearly now. Okay, never mind. Laura doesn't sing.
Don't sing.
Last time we talked about the
cornea.
Yes. And this time we're talking about eyelids. And, you know, I know a few things about eyelids, but it turns out there's lots of things about eyelids.
Yes, there are.
So who knew? Marty's going to get to blow up my brain again. So I'm excited.
Right. So I gave you a little taste of what we're talking about, but I didn't feed you all the information. So yes, there will be surprises.
Woot, woot. There's got to be surprises so that Laura's head can explode. So eyelids. Talk to us about eyelids. I think probably the most common thing I think of when it has to do with the eyelids is entropia, where the little baby lashes, the lower eyelid or even the upper one, rolls in against the eyeball. Yes.
Right. And it's more than just lashes. It's the whole surface of the skin. So there are conditions where it's just the eyelashes, and that's either dystichia or ectopic cilia. But when it's the eyelid that rolls in, it's entropion. When the eyelid rolls out, it's ectropion.
Yes.
Entropion meaning in and ectropion meaning out. So boxers, St. Bernards, Bassets, the dogs that have droopy lids, Clumbers, those are ectropion. But a fair number of those dogs also have entropion because their eyelids just don't match the size of their eye. They're either too big or they're too small, and it kind of turns out to be this mismatch. And some dogs are an interesting combination of both.
Yes.
You look at them and you're like, oh yeah, this is a hot mess.
The important thing that I would say, if you will, in defense of dogs with that particular eyelid formation, is they can be conformed properly if breeders are paying attention to what they're doing. And that they, in many cases, are conformed in a certain way for a certain job. The Clumbers are a perfect example of that because their job was to go underneath heavy brush. And so the feeling was that the looser eyelid would allow the eye to just flush out anything that got in there while they were going through these heavy hedgerows.
But there's a lot about conformation that I think has to be discussed. The sled dogs, for instance, do not have big globe eyes. They're not tiny like a collie, but they're smaller and more almond-shaped for the very reason that you just described is it's environmental. It's a different environment because they're running through the snow. So there's cold, there's ice, there's sun, there's reflection, there's a lot of things happening. So dogs really do have those developmental changes that we have selected for. Yes. And then we, of course, have the infantile looking dogs, all the brachycephalics that have the big round eyes. And when you look deeply into their eyes, they look like an infant child. And that's one of the appealing parts about those breeds. So I think we have to really look at that. And really, the shape of the eyelid, the color of the eye, all those things are very important in the description of dogs that we show.
Yes.
There should be an almond-shaped eye if you're a corgi. It shouldn't be a round headlight. You know, there's very specific descriptions. So if you have a purebred dog and you want to look at what their eyes are supposed to look like, you can go to the breed standard and read it. You can go to their illustrated standard because often those will have illustrations of how the eyes should look.
Yes.
But it's really important. I mean, eyes are really important.
Yeah.
So you can't just say, oh, you know, it's a round eye. It's okay. No, there's a reason that we bred them to have a certain shape.
Yes.
So we have to follow those original blueprints that we gave to the dogs to make sure that they meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. And so when you see entropia, ectropia, some of those eyelid dysfunctions, I guess I would say, malformations, talk to us about what that looks like and what kind of how you manage that as an owner.
Sure. So entropion means the lower eyelid rolls in. Typically, it's from about the middle of the eye out, and it's more common on the lower lid. But it can be the upper as well. And those dogs are really uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. I sometimes have to really push owners hard to understand how painful this is. And you know how it feels to have one tiny eyelash in your eye. Well, this poor dog is walking around with the entire skin surface of their lower eyelid rolled in and rubbing the eye all the time. And so they're always squinting. They're always uncomfortable. Some of them end up with a corneal ulcer.
And they have
which
weeping,
we discussed.
Right? Weeping here at the outside corner usually.
Yeah. Well, the whole eye is weepy because it's really unhappy. So you need to make sure that if you think this might be happening to your dog, that you see a veterinarian. Now, when they're really young puppies, we'll oftentimes do what's called tacking the eyelid. Just put some sutures in the lower eyelid and roll it out. There's also a procedure that's been described to inject collagen. And I spoke to the veterinarian a year or so ago that developed the technique, and she said it doesn't always work really well because some of the people doing it, not all of them, some of the people doing it aren't following the really specific guidelines for how to do it, what product to use, where to put it, how to infuse it so that it's sort of spread out instead of just one blob. So there are some techniques that are non-surgical, but we often tack the eyelids on these young puppies.
Sure.
And a lot of them outgrow their entropion if you let them grow up, that their eye gets big enough and their eyelids develop normally, because if they keep squinting, then they keep squinting.
Right.
It becomes self-perpetuating. And the more they squint, the more it rolls in, the more it rolls in, the more they squint. And so you have to really break that cycle with suture. I don't surgically correct these on young dogs other than tacking until the dog has enough facial maturity that they're pretty much at their adult size and shape for their face. Otherwise, you may end up overcorrecting and having too much rolled out so it'll look like an ectropion. Or it'll continue to roll in because you didn't take enough. And here's the tricky part is when they go home after surgery, I tell every single owner, they are going to look overcorrected. You're going to go home. The swelling is going to, the sutures, all this stuff. And for the first 5 days, you're going to be swearing at me thinking that I have done a terrible job fixing this. And your dog is going to walk around looking like a basset for the rest of its life. And then we get out to day six when the swelling starts to go down and you're like, oh, it's okay now.
Yeah.
So very important that if you have a general practitioner that does this, that you do have faith that they know how to do it and faith that they will tell you. But if they forget to tell you that it may look overcorrected initially, don't get into a panic. And there are some practitioners that will do this. And there are some practitioners that are like, nope, you need to see an ophthalmologist. So if you see an ophthalmologist, they do a fabulous job, but it can be a good deal more expensive. So if you have a general practitioner that is skilled at this, and it's really not that hard, then you can see your general practitioner. But don't wait. If your puppy has rolled in eyelids, don't wait. Get those tacked. Even if your vet says, well, I don't even anesthetize these puppies. We put a local block in, put a couple sutures in, a little peanut butter to keep their attention, and bada bing, bada boom, 3 minutes in, and we've got them tacked. So it's not that big a deal. I've been tacking eyelids since we had Sharpays being brought into the country 45 years ago. So yes, this is not uncommon. It's more common in certain breeds than others. We don't really like it. We would rather have it out of our lines, but there are some lines that have it and it can take a while to breed those out. So if we're looking at eyelids in general, we're going to look at sort of five different categories. We're going to look at swellings. We're going to look at tumors. We're going to look at infections. We're going to look at allergies. We're going to look at immune mediated, and we're going to look at the conformation of the eyelids, six categories. And you also kind of have to realize that sometimes when you look at the eyelid, you're not sure if you have an eye case, an ophthalmology case, or if you have a dermatology case, because the eyelid is clearly skin. And so we can see some dermatology situations that you're like, who do I see? Like, do I start with my general practitioner?
What do,
or do I
do
start
with
an ophthalmologist?
Right.
Right. Who do I go to? Like, who's the doctor that sees this?
Right.
So
right.
It can be a little tricky sometimes to figure this out. So start with your general practitioner because they're generally going to know what they're doing. And then they're going to be able to say, oh, this is a problem with the skin. I'm going to send you to derm. Or this is a problem with the eye. I'm going to send you to opto. Or, hey, this is no big deal. I've fixed these before, surgically or medically. So there are surgeries for some of these, but not all eyelid conditions are surgical. A lot of them are medical. So they may be on antibiotics, either topical or oral. They may be on a steroid, either topical or oral. They may be on one of the new allergy medications that we have now on the market that really help a lot with these problems. It may be something as simple as a warm compress. If it's a sty on the eye, you can put on a warm compress. And if it gets better, great. So we do have a variety of different treatments that we need to do based on what the diagnosis is. So number one, get a diagnosis. This is pretty much the same thing we talk about every week. First, get a diagnosis. Then you can do a treatment. I mean, like, don't just start putting antibiotics into your dog's eye or giving them oral antibiotics without a diagnosis. See your vet.
And I think that so much of what we see around us, right? When you look at eyeballs, people get scared. Because as you said, eyes are really important. The dog needs to be able to see. It's a scary thing. So talk to us about some of the things that are going to be symptoms that the owners might see that would indicate that it's X, Y, or Z of the eyelid problems.
Sure. So typically if you see squinting, discharge, any color discharge is important. Any change in the way the eye looks to you, any change in the color of the eye, anything that looks abnormal, or if the dog is rubbing, squinting, the cat is rubbing and squinting, any of those things that are changes, then you need to be paying attention. Now, if it's, you know, 10 o'clock at night and the dog doesn't look too uncomfortable and there's not something obviously in the eye, then you're probably okay to wait until morning. But I mean, we've had dogs come in with a fish hook stuck on their eyelid. You know, stuff like this happens. So if you have a fish hook in the eyelid, if you have a fish hook in the eyelid, don't wait until morning. Go to the emergency clinic. You know, don't diddle around with this. But like, if there's something really traumatic happening to the eye, you need to get in. If it's your garden variety, there's a little green gooey discharge in the inner corner, wash it with a little baby shampoo. Don't go crazy. Maybe a little artificial tears, a little baby shampoo, maybe a warm compress, and then make your appointment in the morning to go in. Because most of these things can wait unless it's clearly something significantly abnormal.
But I think it's important for people to understand how much the entropia can affect the dogs. I had a tiny little mixed breed dog when I was a kid that my parents had brought from the shelter. And it was the cutest little, I don't know what he was, just a little tiny mutt. And my parents didn't understand or know or adhere to the fact, you know, like notice the fact that this dog had serious eye problems. And the poor little guy was so entropic that his eyelashes had scratched on his eyes long enough, he basically was blind. And didn't get out of the way when my dad backed up, sort of thing, you know? And I just think this kind of thing is so important to pay attention to because it is important for our dog's health.
Right. And so when we see an entropion, and I have to twist somebody's arm to convince them that we should tack the eyelids and then later on do a corrective surgery if it doesn't correct itself, I can't really understand why I have clients that put a fight about it, because it is painful to the dog. And yes, it can leave permanent damage. And the more they squint, the more they squint. So entropion really definitely needs to have a problem addressed pretty quickly. Ectropion, there's not some urgency with that. And a lot of times we never have to do anything with it. It's just the way the dog is. And when you come out of the field, then you may have to flush the eye and just be careful, but it doesn't turn into anything serious. A sty on the eyelid, again, it'll look similar to a meibomian gland tumor or other gland tumors that we see on the edges of the eyelid. We see a lot in older dogs. A lot of dogs have eyelid tumors. Very, very, very common. Almost always in dogs, they're benign. They're almost always meibomian gland tumors. They can be other things, but I've never seen anything that was anything more serious. But cats, on the other hand, are cats. And so if we see an eyelid tumor on a cat, oftentimes it's a squamous cell carcinoma, which is cancer. But on the dog, it's almost never. And again, a lot of these dogs are older. And if I see something that's there and the dog is chronically having draining from the eye, I say to the client, look, your dog is uncomfortable. You see the goo coming out of their eye. They're rubbing at it. You need to fix it. Well, he seems okay. Okay, we don't have to anesthetize a lot of these older dogs to do this. Now, if you're putting them under for a dental, great time to take it off. But I do a lot of these, and not everybody will. But I do a lot of these with a local block, a little sedation, and the dog just sits on the table. And we put a little local block in. We take a little tiny wedge section out of the eye surgically, out of the eyelid margin, enough to get all underneath what's growing under there. Put a couple sutures in and you go out the door 10 minutes later. It's not a big deal. But don't leave your dog with these tumors, with entropion, with some of these really painful conditions. Because if your dog's eye is draining, they're trying to tell you something.
Right.
So please pay attention. That's important. Now, the other thing that we can see fairly commonly, especially in young puppies, are extra eyelashes. And those are actually on the margin of the eyelid, so it's not the eyelid rolling in, but there are little tiny hair follicles and the hairs are growing the wrong direction out of the hair follicle and it's rubbing on the eye. And again, that can cause the dog some irritation. Sometimes it's not a big deal, sometimes it is. if it's just a little couple of little soft eyelashes, it's not serious. If there's one that kind of pokes up and it's like a windshield washer, those dogs, again, are pretty uncomfortable and they can end up with corneal ulcers. So you can pluck those, but if they grow back, then you need to have surgery. There is cryosurgery, there's a lid resection, there's electrosurgery. There are multiple ways that these can be fixed. But like, if you're not sure, get a really good light and get a magnification with your cell phone. You can do a little magnifier with your cell phone and a light, or you can get a magnifying glass and a flashlight, or sit your dog in front of the window when it's a sunny day and get a good look. And if you see some of those things, then yeah, you need to bring that to the attention of your veterinarian. Mm. Back when I was younger, I didn't used to need magnification to see Distichia. I could just walk
in the
exam
room and go, oh. You have to put it way out here, like full arm's length.
I have to get the head loop and the magnifier out, you know, the whole bit. Thank goodness those are sold on Amazon for $20. But yes, you do sometimes need magnification to see some of these things. But if your dog is chronically having a watery eye, then that's one of the things it can be. Another thing it can be is a blocked tear duct. And that's not serious.
Right.
But it's an easy thing to test for. If your dog chronically has a wet eye or eyes at the inner corner, then your doctor can put some dye, some fluorescein dye, the same thing we talked about for corneal ulcers,
sure,
a drop on each eye. And then you wait about 3 minutes and you get out your little black light. And those tears that you put the dye into, that orange color, green color should show up in their nostril within about 3 minutes. So it's super cool. And if you don't see it, then the dog or the cat has a blocked tear duct. And again, that's pretty easy to fix. You put a little tube in, a little catheter, you flush it, because oftentimes it's blocked with mucus. There's a few dogs and a few cats that don't have the opening in their eyelid margins that drain the tears. So you do, I do, every human has a little puncta, a little duct on the top eyelid and the bottom eyelid that allows your tears to drain into your nose. So dogs should have them, cats should have them, but sometimes cats, they're scarred from upper respiratory infections. Some dogs developmentally just don't have them. And again, it's easy to diagnose. You put the drop of thing in their eye and you can tell.
And
What?
I am this many years old and I did not know that your tears go into your nose. I was today old when I find that out. Today.
Yeah, they do. If you go in the bathroom and you pull down your lower eyelid and look in the mirror, you can see a little tiny opening in the inner corner of your eye, and that's where your tears drain.
Is that why when you cry, your nose gets snotty?
Uh-huh.
What?
Uh-huh.
What?
Uh-huh. Okay.
What?
This seems obvious to me.
That's because you're a trained medical professional, and I'm just a Yahoo podcast host. Like, what do I know?
So
you cry into your nose.
Yeah.
Who knew you cried into your nose? Anybody out there in listener land know that you cry into your nose? Come on.
So you can go see it. And if you're really interested, you can put a little pressure on the inner corner of your eye and push, and you can taste the salty tears drain into the back of your throat. I used to have a technician that had blocked tear ducts, and well, we would work on fixing those. So yes, people have them, dogs have them, cats have them. Yeah.
Okay.
So yes,
there you go.
That little
the thing that
duct.
Blows up Laura's brain for today is that you're crying into your nose. Cause
Yes.
Okay, great. Hey, friends. Did you know that the Marty and Laura Show website has a special page just for young animal lovers? Whether your child is meeting their first pet or already dreaming of becoming a veterinarian, Kids Corner is a place to explore animals through creativity, curiosity, and age-appropriate learning. Designed for young animal lovers and their families, these resources encourage empathy, responsibility, and a lifelong love of pets. Start off with a free coloring page. That's right. A new coloring page is available regularly. Download one free and check back often for new designs. And if you love that free page, take your coloring adventure further with the 10-page Color Me Pets coloring pack for just $5. Each page is filled with adorable, breed-specific dogs and fun educational prompts that spark creativity and curiosity. This pack is perfect for kids who want to explore, who want to color, and who want to discover more about pets. It encourages careful observation, fine motor skills, and an appreciation for animals, all while providing hours of fun. Plus, It's an easy, printable download, perfect for rainy days, long car rides, or creative play at home. Artwork by award-winning artist Sandy Mesmer, the Color Me Canine Collection brings even more adorable pets and fun designs. Explore full coloring books available online through Sandy's shop link on our page. Visit MartyandLauraShow.com/kids-corner to learn more.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Moving right along, because I'm still stuck over here.
Okay.
Block tear ducts. What about, and I don't know if this goes in eyelids or not, and if it doesn't, then we can save it for the next time. Dry eye. Because I know that dogs, I have seen dogs with that get all like gooky around their eyeballs. Is that part of this conversation?
It can be, because the oil glands, the meibomian glands, the ones that get the little tumors on the eyelid margins, those are the glands that produce the oil. And the tears are made of three layers. The tears are made of a water layer, a mucus layer, and an oil layer. So the little tiny glands on the edges of the eye make the oil layer, and the oil layer is the outer part that keeps the tears from evaporating too fast. Okay. Then the lacrimal gland is on the third eyelid in dogs and cats. That's the gland that makes tears, the watery part of the tears. So there are some dogs, and we'll talk about cherry eye more in our next segment, but there are some dogs, not usually cats, that have a cherry eye, and that's when the little gland on the back of the third eyelid pops out because the T-shaped cartilage in the third eyelid doesn't hold it in position. And so those dogs will have that. And so one of the procedures that can be done but should not be done is to cut the gland off if the dog has an averted gland. Now, you're not supposed to do that, because if you do, then the dog may later on in life not have enough tear production, because that's one of the parts of the watery layer of the tear. So don't let your vet cut off the third eyelid gland. If you see it protruding, then you can go in and see either another veterinarian that is comfortable with fixing it, and there's a new procedure now that's much easier than the ones we were taught 10 years ago. Or you can see an ophthalmologist and they can do it. So there's a little pocket technique that they suture that down in. So we'll talk about cherry eye more.
Okay.
But yes, that's important. That's where dry eye comes from. In some cases, is the removal of the gland. In other cases, the dogs have some immune mediated or other reason that they stop making tears. And then those dogs produce too much mucus to compensate for the lack of water in their tear film, because there's three layers to the tear film. And so that mucus gets really icky. So you'll say to a client, well, your dog isn't making enough tears. And they're like, yeah, they are. Look at all the stuff.
Look at all the goo.
Well, that's not the stuff your dog is supposed to have. It's not the mucus. It's the clear film, the water layer of the tear film that should be there. So the tear film has three layers. And sometimes the tear film doesn't work right. So some older dogs will develop recurrent or frequent corneal ulcers because their tear film has a defect. There's so many things that can go wrong.
I'm telling you, this is insanity. I mean, all the things, and it's eyeballs and eyelids, you know, clumbers, right? So we see enough eye things and dry eye and crusty, gooey. Treatment for that.
For dry eye?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we used to just have artificial tears, or a million years ago, pilocarpine that could either be used as an eye drop or a drop in the food to make the dog salivate and produce more tears. And then for a while, there was a surgical procedure that the duct from the salivary gland was transposed to the eye to make more tears because the dog couldn't make tears. Well, about 20, maybe 30 years ago, a product came to market, and I think it was discovered by a veterinarian, but is now being used on the human side as well, that uses either cyclosporin or tacrolimus as a product that makes the dog's tear production increase. Okay. Some dogs do well on one, some dogs do well on the other. I've got a couple of dogs that need to be on both to make it happen, and that gets kind of expensive. It's not an inexpensive medication, but it's also used in women. A lot of postmenopausal women develop dry eye because their estrogen levels change. So they also use cyclosporin in the eye.
I think that that is an important one because, you know, you see enough dogs of the, I guess, would it be the ectropic, the more open eyelid, droopy eyelid, you see a lot of goo with that. So what's next on our list of eyelids?
Well, edges of the eyelid can be, like I said, a dermatology case. And so that's where it gets kind of interesting. And this, I'm going to blow up your brain a second time today.
Oh,
are you ready?
A twofer?
I know. Okay. So dogs can have demodex around their eye or in their eyelid margins, right?
Yeah.
And they can have sort of a raccoon look. They'll have this pattern of hair loss around their eyes.
A lot of times.
Right. And oftentimes in patches of in other parts of their body. And so if you do a skin scraping and you find the mites, then you know you have demodex.
Right.
But here's what's really interesting is people, a fair number of people have demodex in their eyelash follicles, in their eyes. A lot of people have this. And that wasn't too big a deal until fairly recently when women started putting on those big, giant eyelashes that they, the fake eyelashes that they glue on it. And they're beautiful. I'm never going to look good in those. They're beautiful. For the women that can wear them and pull them off, great. But a fair number of those women have now developed demodex in their eyelid margins because of the glue or the eyelash or I don't know exactly the mechanism because I'm not a human physician. But I will tell you that, you know, we have four oral flea and tick medications for dogs, right?
Right.
Credelio, Nexgard, Simparica, and Bravecto. Those are all isoxazolas as a drug class. Well, that is the same drug class that they use for women or people, mostly women because they wear the eyelashes, for demodex. And there's an amazing commercial on the internet and on TV for the drug. It's hysterical. They dressed up a comedian to look like a demodex mite. She's been interviewed on TV. She is hysterically funny. I can't remember her name now. But if you look up demodex and look up for the commercial for the comedian that's dressed as the mite, it is hysterically funny. So please do not miss this opportunity to be entertained some night when you're wondering what to do in
dancing
front of your computer,
you should be got doing it. Something else. Dancing demodex mites on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is a riot. So we can see demodex in the eyelid margins. We can see infections in the eyelid that will be in the eyelid margin. We can see ringworm there, especially in cats. Mm-hmm. In puppies, we can see strangles, which can happen. And we can see allergic changes as well. And we can also see zinc deficiencies and immune-mediated diseases. Yeah, zinc deficiencies oftentimes show up as the nose being that real crusty, weird, black, peeling stuff. But it can also be eyelid margins. And we can also see immune-mediated disease on the eyelid margins and around the lips and any mucocutaneous junction. So that's the lips, the toenails, the ears, the eyes. So the eyes may be what you see first. Mm-hmm. And those are dogs oftentimes with an immune-mediated disease like pemphigus or one of those other weird disorders. So just because you have an eyelid margin situation doesn't mean your vet is just going to hand you a bottle of antibiotics or a bottle of eye drops and say you're good. These may require multiple trips in to kind of do some detective work, maybe a biopsy, maybe a referral to a dermatologist or an ophthalmologist to figure this out. So a lot of us will put them on an antibiotic and a steroid and see how they respond, or maybe the Bravecto for demodex. But if that doesn't get them better, then you may have to chase this down with more enthusiasm.
Okay. Like I said, you know, we talked about the eyeball concept and we're going to do eyeballs for a month. I did not believe there was enough material to do eyeballs for a month. We're not even,
I told you we'd have
we're not even through eyelids. It's crazy talk.
And then we also, this is more for people who have litters of puppies, but neonatal ophthalmia is another really important thing to discuss. And that's where behind the eyelids, before the puppy's eyes are open, they can get an infection. It doesn't happen often. I just did a presentation yesterday for a national breed club. And one of the people there said, oh, yeah, we have had that. And it is icky.
Let me tell you, when you are, I don't know, 17 years old and you've been left home alone with the wire hair and her litter of puppies and everybody's gone, all the grown-ups are gone, and you go down to the whelping box and there's a 10-day-old puppy with an eyeball the size of a red grape. Trust me. You get real frantic real fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is genuinely an ophthalmic emergency. The ophthalmologist that I know very well, every time I talk to him, he's like, you need to make sure you're talking about this at every neonatal conference that you do. So I talked about it yesterday. The eyelids need to be opened. I usually put on a warm compress and then open them with a little bit of pressure or a hemostat. But somebody told me yesterday, and this was smart. I can't believe I didn't think of this, that they took just a soft little IV catheter without the needle in it and slid that under the eyelid in the corner and then flushed it to help open it. I thought that was really clever. So I need to upgrade how I do this.
Up your game, yeah.
But nevertheless, it is important. And if you don't get those eyes open, the dogs end up oftentimes with dry eye or blind. And I have seen some really beautiful dogs end up without any vision because they didn't identify and get it corrected quickly enough. Mm. So you need to get the eyelids open. You need to be on a topical antibiotic, an oral antibiotic as soon as possible. And, you know, just be aware that if you see it in one eye in one puppy, my rule is you bring the entire litter in. We open everybody's eyes because I can guarantee you there's going to be three more eyes somewhere in that litter that just aren't swollen yet. And they should open their eyes between 10 and 14 days. If they don't open their eyes by then, you have to get the eyelids open again for the same reason as we can lose vision because of these infections. So don't dawdle on this. This is genuinely an emergency. Put a warm compress on, get the eyelids open if you can. If you can't because it's Thanksgiving Day and the emergency clinic doesn't have time to see you, figure it out. Do the warm compresses and get the eyes open as quickly as you can. You're not going to hurt the puppies by opening their eyes early. You're going to cause more harm by leaving them closed. So genuinely a dermatology and an ophthalmology emergency. Those are, you know, pretty much, I think, the highlights of what we can see with eye problems. It is vast. It is deep.
That's not even eye problems. That's just eyelids. Come on now.
That's just eyelids. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that can happen on the eyelids. So, you know, if you have a cat, it's a different situation. If you have a dog, but just be aware that all of these things are important. So use a warm compress, use a topical eye drop that's nice and safe. A lot of dogs with allergic eye problems, I use Pataday, which is an over-the-counter human eye drop. Okay. Works well for those allergic dogs. Artificial tears, Pataday, warm compresses, baby shampoo, those are all perfectly fine to use at home until you can get your appointment to get in, and you probably want to make it as soon as possible because you only get two eyes, and if you screw one up, you only have a spare. So you need to get these problems taken care of, whether it's the cornea or the retina or glaucoma or what it happens to be. We really need to make sure that people are aware of the significance of this and how painful these situations can be. So you just, you don't want to mess around with this. If the dog is entropion and your vet says to fix it, do this with your head. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, I will fix it because I don't want my dog in pain, and it is a painful condition.
Mm-hmm. For folks that breed dogs, I think it's important to keep in mind that entropion has some hereditary basis.
Mm. So that's for sure.
To just kind of, I've washed dogs from my breeding program for it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And all typically right. You can get rid of it in a generation, but you do have to be diligent, and you can't just fix the eyelid and merrily go on your way and use that dog in a breeding program. So you should be really cautious about how you
some breeds you can't. I mean, there are breeds in which if you took out all the dogs that had entropia, you wouldn't have a breed left.
Yeah, so. That's true. So be selective, but be smart about how you're selective. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, work through it with your veterinarian or a geneticist or someone that can help you figure it out, because yes, you're right. You can't wash everything out.
That was mom's. Mom was really a big fanatic about breeding good eyes and clumbers, and it's hard to do, and she did it, but it's not easy. So just a thing for people to keep in mind. We're all working hard to make sure that we have dogs with good eyeballs. All right, Marty, thank you so much. You guys, we will have more eyeball conversation. Shockingly enough, more eyeball conversation coming up ahead. So we'll catch you next week.
Okay.
Thanks, Marty.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.